As best as I can tell, everyone who longs to know God lives in a tension between grace and works. On the one hand, we want to believe in a God of grace, a God who comes to us totally and completely unprompted, who is not perturbed by all of our faults and our failings, and whose love isn't earned by all of our little dog and pony shows. But on the other hand, we live in a scorekeeping obsessed world. And so it is hard to get out of our minds the idea that there really is some sort of giant tally sheet, some sort of giant score sheet to life. As Barbara Brown Taylor writes, "I may believe in God's grace, but I act like a scout collecting merit badges. I may believe that my life depends on God's grace, but I act like it depends on me and how many good deeds I can perform, as if every day were a talent show and God had nothing better to do than to keep up with my score." Now, here I will be honest with you. I want God to notice all of my merit badges. I want God to pay attention to my little song and dance. I want God to give me a good score. I always have. And knowing quite a lot of you fairly well, I know that many of you struggle with this same idea too. It's the idea that good people get what they deserve and bad people get what they deserve. Good actions receive God's favor and blessing, and bad deeds receive God's ire and condemnation. And obviously, I am the former, clearly. Now, there are two major problems with this idea, with this scorekeeping faith. The first problem is theological, and it is articulated nowhere better than in Paul's letter to the Romans that we are hearing on these many Sundays in the summer. In this letter to the Romans, Paul is very clear that God is not persuaded by our good deeds to love us. God is already inherently loving, and there are no amount of good deeds that we could do that could ever buy God's love and favor, as though life is some sort of giant cosmic transaction. Because to believe that we can somehow acquire God's love by some action of our own inevitably, eventually leads us to believe that we are somehow personally in charge of our own salvation, that we can somehow good deed our way into heaven. But one of the most fundamental of Christian beliefs is that we can't, that we need a Savior, that we need Jesus Christ. Now, the second big problem with this idea, this scorekeeping faith, is much more practical, and I would call it an observational problem. It's that life simply does not match up. It's that this belief simply does not match up with what we observe in the course of ordinary, real life. When you really begin to pay attention, it turns out that there is absolutely no correlation between people who do good, who are truly, genuinely selfless, kind, generous, you know the types. There's no correlation between people who do good and the sorts of rewards that they receive in life. Life is not balanced in its rewards for the good, because God is not a vending machine into which we pump prayers and all of our nice little actions in order to extract good things back, namely prosperity and good health and happiness. Now, the most obvious example of this truth down through the centuries has been the lives of the saints, the people who are models to us of righteousness. And if anyone ever deserved God's good treatment for the way they lived out their lives, well, then it would be these women and men. But history shows us that they often faced grueling hardships and crises and difficulties. And the same is all too often true for the faithful today. In just the last few months, I've noticed that some of the very best people I know, the people who do the sorts of things that the rest of us pretty much just give lip service to in our lives. Things like taking in foster children and spending dozens of hours every month in service of important charities, or even bravely choosing to leave behind, to quit the rat race of the corporate world entirely in order to give themselves wholeheartedly over, full time, to the service of others. These kinds of folks, I've noticed, the best kind that I know in my life, are also struggling amidst many challenges. They're facing cancer, grappling how to help struggling kids, how to overcome addictions, lifelong addictions, dealing with bitter turmoil at their businesses. These are some of the very best people I know, also some of the most faithful. And yet their lives are not simple or easy. They're not smothered in some sort of generic happiness and prosperity. So from simple observation, it does not make sense to say that God operates some sort of cosmic score sheet and rewards people according to their good deeds. Actually, it turns out that the Apostle Paul believed really quite the opposite. In the bit of Romans that we heard this morning in church, Paul has this to say: I find it to be a law that when I want to do the good, evil lies close at hand. I find it to be a law that when I want to do what is good, evil lies close at hand. Now, Paul was talking about his own situation and the struggle that he had personally to consistently do what he knew to be right. But I believe what he describes stands up to scrutiny over time, stands up to the test of our own lives, our own observation here today. Those who risk their lives for the sake of others, those who are selfless and compassionate and brave, those who step out boldly into complicated and perilous places in our world for the sake of what they know to be the kingdom of God, they often experience greater hardships than those who are sitting on the sideline of life, passively believing something good, but not actually doing anything in response. I have found that those who not only want to love God with their whole selves, their whole being, love their neighbor as themselves, those people who not only want to do that, but are actually really living it out and doing it, reap further challenges, not rewards. As Paul says, in such cases, evil lies close at hand. It's ready to put up stumbling blocks. It's ready to lay traps. It's ready to cause havoc. It's ready to weaken and degrade and exhaust the righteous. A decent litmus test to know if you are living a bold and righteous life is whether or not you receive pushback. If you think that you are loving and serving just like Jesus, and things are getting better and easier and safer for you, then you're probably headed in the wrong direction. On the other hand, if things get harder and more complicated for you, if it feels as though some sort of cruel force is mounting against you, then I hate to tell you, it probably means you're headed in the right direction. Now, some of this force is internal. It is within our own hearts and minds. Paul seems to have struggled with this very thing, and I know that I struggle with it too. It's the voice of cynicism and pettiness and weariness that whispers at us, tells us to back off, whispers at us as we consider what we're going to do in order to pursue what we know is right. That sinister little voice inside of us that slowly twists and perverts our good intentions and convinces us to not even bother at all. Yes, evil can lurk within us, right within our own minds and hearts. But some of the pushback that we receive in life is genuinely external. It's in the status quo of injustice that just does not seem to budge. It's in those genuinely malicious people who say and do cruel things to us. It's in the financial problems that make us so worried about our families and our homes and our futures that we give up on our noble pursuits. I just read Taylor Branch's Pulitzer Prize-winning History of America in the 1950s and 60s, and the resistance that he describes in it to the civil rights movement is just this sort of evil force, a mixture of hate and bigotry and just pure apathy, which combined to besiege all those who were pouring out their lives for the sake of justice. I find it to be a law, Paul says, that when I want to do what is good, evil lies close at hand. Well, as Christians, we do the good, not because it earns us easier lives, not because God is counting up all of our merit badges in order to give us some sort of prize, and certainly not so that we can earn God's love, but because doing good is simply what we are made for. It is who we are meant to be, and it is what we are meant to do. Loving God and loving our neighbor, it's not some sort of game that we play in order to score points. It is a command given by God that aligns with the divine image that is planted deeply in the core of our being. When we act generously and sacrificially and lovingly, when we behave righteously, we are enacting the truest version of ourselves. We are being who we were always meant to be. It's not about earning something. It's not about getting something. It's about being who God made us to be. Even though it's hard. Even though it may seem strange and foreign at first. Even though evil may lie close at hand and retaliate against our efforts. If this seems daunting and intimidating, if it seems like I am up here making the absolute worst pitch for the Christian life in the history of preaching, which may be the case, just remember the words of Jesus. Come to me, all who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. Now, I have to admit to you that I have always wondered if Jesus was just being ironic about his yoke being easy and his burden being light, because that is not the only thing Jesus ever had to say to pick up, for us to pick up. Elsewhere, he tells us to pick up our crosses. Doesn't sound too light or easy to me. But in recent years, I've come to learn something about yokes that has helped me understand this passage and to realize that Jesus is not being ironic or sarcastic or snarky. Some of you may already have known this about yokes. I had to come to learn it more recently. It turns out that there are two basic kinds of yokes that can be used to bear a burden. Single ones and shared ones. Now, single yokes are very efficient. By placing a yoke across the shoulders and fitting buckets or some sort of other burden equally on either side, a person can carry, truly carry, an impressive weight. Now, you won't be able to carry it for very long, and your back will begin to throb and ache, and you will have to set it down fairly often. But it is possible to carry large weights from one place to another with a single yoke. But a shared yoke works differently. It takes at least two creatures, of course. But if they are well matched, these two creatures together, yoked together, can carry that same heavy load all day long. It's because in a shared yoke, one can rest while the other pulls. They can cover for each other without ever having to set their burden down because the yoke is shared. They can take turns bearing the brunt of that burden. And when the day is done, though they may be tired, neither is spent or exhausted because they have worked as a team. We are mistaken if we think that the only way to please God is to load ourselves down under a single yoke with the heaviness of good deeds and blameless lives. And we are mistaken if we think that whenever hardship befalls us, even when we've been doing our very best to live out our God-given goodness in the world, that it is somehow because God no longer cares about us, that God somehow no longer loves us. And we are mistaken if we think that the burdens that we carry are ours only, that in the end that somehow it's up to us alone to live out the enormous and difficult task of loving God and loving our neighbors as ourselves. Because when we accept Jesus' invitation, when we join our lives to His, we are yoked to one who has strength to bear the burden with us. And more than half of the yoke rests upon His shoulders. He knows how to help us through these difficulties and obstacles. He knows how to help us resist the evil that lies close at hand whenever we pursue the good. He knows how to lighten our load. He knows how to restore our souls. So come to Him, all you who are weary, all you who are carrying score sheets, all you who are facing slings and arrows in response to goodness and mercy, all you who are struggling to live out your God-given goodness in this world run amok. Come to Him. Yoke yourself to Him. And He will give you rest. And all of God's people said,